Good evening. It's about 9 o'clock Northern California time in the evening. We're back with Lady in Gold, the extraordinary tale of Gustav Klimt's masterpiece, Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer, written by Anne-Marie O'Connor. And we are at the chapter called Work Makes Freedom, page 122. Fritz was resting in his prison cell on an unbearably hot night in late May when SS officers strode in and ordered him and 200 other men to get in line. "They're taking us to Dachau, some of the men whispered. "Dachau." The SS recruits who pushed them onto the train with their rifle butts were boys. They looked 16 or 17, their soft faces contorted with hate as they yelled, "Get down!" The teenagers pushed a slow old man onto the floor and kicked him until he curled up in pain. They ordered the men to sit motionless and stare at the light in the ceiling. As the train bumped along into the countryside, older men strained to hold their necks rigid. As the hours went by, the guards forced elderly passengers to stand. Many were not physically capable of it. A former managing director of the Austrian railways stumbled, and they beat the old man over the head with their rifle butts until blood streamed down his face. He cringed on the floor, clutching his broken spectacles, his eyes bright with bewildered tears. This train was not filled with huddled masses of poor Viennese from Leopoldstadt. The passengers were clergymen, entertainers, decorated World War I veterans, hostages from wealthy families. This train carried celebrities like Fritz Grunbaum, the Groucho Marx of Vienna. This Dachau would house child psychiatrist Bruno Bettelheim. Some gentlemen eyed the windows. Men had come into their homes, stolen their silverware, and dragged them off. What had become of their wives and daughters? But the guards watched them closely. People had already tried to jump from the train. Outside, the train rolled through a spring landscape Fritz knew by heart, a riot of Austrian wildflowers that Klimt had immortalized in his paintings. In the humid air, red poppies rested alongside lacy spikes of bouquets in every shade of purple and lavender. The grass was the pale green Klimt had captured so vividly, and the rich soil was fecund with beets, wheat, and barley. It was an unseen paradise, and Fritz, who had been in jail since the first chestnut trees bloomed, could tell when they passed through the farmland by the smell of moist earth. Dawn broke. The train slowed to a stop. Fritz was shoved off the train, as cramped and stiff as a crab. Guards met them with angry faces, barking orders, "Line up! Get your heads shaved there!" Fritz stood exhaustedly in line. The Fritz who had once risen at dawn to secure good standing room for La Boheme at Vienna's elaborate angel-bedecked state opera now looked around amazed at a very different architectural tableau. Dachau, Germany's original concentration camp, was outfitted for another kind of theater. The camp was surrounded by a deep trench and a high fence of barbed wire. Its stark yard was designed to make prisoners feel as insignificant as insects. This was the stage of deliberate cruelty. The SS held absolute power over the prisoners, who were humiliated, degraded, and crushed. Dachau would be the model for the camps of the right. As Fritz passed through the black iron gates, he saw the words spelled out in twisted metal. Work makes freedom. I paused it there to look up the pronunciation of this Nazi concentration camp, and I've been saying it wrong. It's Dachau. Not Dachau. 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 So, we're into the nitty-gritty of this part of the book. This is probably going to be hard for me to read, just as a caveat. Okay, so where were we? Was there anyone less suited to withstand the rigors of life at Dachau than the golf-playing, waltzing former playboy Fritz Altman? His brother Bernard fought the family battles. His mother Caroline had founded the business. If Fritz worried about clean handkerchiefs and pressed shirts in jail in Vienna, such niceties were now left behind. The Nazis had already seized Bernard's Vienna factory and arrested its 24 managers. Bernard still held cash from the factory's earnings in foreign bank accounts. To force Bernard to transfer the accounts to them, authorities had adopted, quote, the gangster's method and took a hostage, end quote. Fritz realized, I was taken for the hostage and was imprisoned. Nobody told me why, for how long, or to what purpose. The Nazis were in a stalemate, chasing their infuriating prey. They set up a meeting in Paris. Bernard arrived in an impeccable suit. Outwardly, it was like a business meeting, albeit a rather coercive one. The emissaries told Bernard that if he wanted to see his brother alive, he should sign his client payment accounts over to them. The Reich also demanded his Paris assets. With an arrogance that the canny Bernard noted with great interest. The Germans were not yet in France, yet they already felt entitled to Jewish businesses in Paris. Interesting. They ordered Bernard to promise never to produce his well-known brand, Bernard Altman, anywhere else, to avoid competition with the factory they had confiscated. Bernard wanted to laugh out loud. Who the hell did they think they were? But he maintained his stern poker face, puffing on his cigar. I'll do as you wish, Bernard lied. But first you must release my brother. Since Fritz's last name began with an A, he was among the first to have his head shaved. As the afternoon wore on, the prisoners were registered, shaved, and insulted until they stood exhausted before the camp commander in their baggy tunics with Stars of David fashioned with red and yellow triangles. The men had not slept in 30 hours. Fritz stumbled to the barracks where he could sleep. Sunburned, dazed, and numb, he lay down on his wooden plank and passed out. At 3:30 a.m., the men stood before the guards as they took roll call, punctuated with Jewish swine. Everything in Dachau is prohibited, a commander told new prisoners. Even life itself. If it happens, it happens by accident. Fritz and the other men dug ditches and carted cement. The day went on endlessly into the evening. Those who fell down were flogged. Finally, at 9 p.m., they were relieved. They staggered to dinner, men in their 60s and 70s, as old as his father-in-law, Gustav. Fritz shuddered, appeared near collapse. Fritz wondered how long they could make it. A few days after they arrived, they were forced to stand at attendance for hours while guards searched the camp and its surroundings for a missing prisoner. They finally found him. He was an old man, dead in his bed. Work makes freedom. What a lie, thought Fritz, who had never in his life performed arduous labor. In Fritz's experience, the people who extolled the virtues of work were people who wanted other people to toil for them. They're going to work us to death, the Jewish swine, Fritz thought. But the prisoners were not all Jewish. Some of the 500 men at the camp were gay with pink triangles, communists and socialists with red triangles, while black triangles were used for antisocial elements. The deposed mayor of Vienna, Richard Schmitz, a Catholic, was in the camp for refusing to hand over City Hall. Also in Dachau, unbelievably, were Ernst and Maximilian Hohenberg, the sons of the last heir to the Habsburg throne, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, whose assassination in 1914 had set off World War I. The other prisoners, startled to be mingling with Habsburgs, addressed them as Your Royal Highness. The men bore their ordeal stoically, their stony faces doing little to disguise their disdain. Fritz was delighted with Grunbaum. The social satirist was assigned to his barracks. Grunbaum was well known in the cabarets of Berlin and Vienna. One of the letters asking for Grunbaum's release was written from the Chateau Marmont Hotel in Hollywood. Like those of the Max brothers, the targets of Grunbaum's humor ran the gamut, from politics, meaning, of course, the Nazis, to himself. Grunbaum was irreverent, wicked, and an astute mimic. He reduced the guards who terrorized them by day into buffoonish, goose-stepping cartoons by night. But as the days passed, he did it more discreetly. The camp guards had it in for Grunbaum. They weren't ashamed to imprison talented people. A Nazi propaganda pamphlet circulating in Vienna had photos of Jews and Jew lackeys at the Dachau resort. Celebrities in uniform. Poor Grunbaum was featured prominently, his famous beloved face squinting into the Dachau sun in a white camp tunic. The Viennese were accustomed to seeing posters of Grunbaum in a dapper smoking jacket, smiling under his mustache and comically raised eyebrows with his glamorous blonde wife, Lilia Herzl, at his side. This new vision was bizarre, another sign of their upside-down world. Another camp luminary was Herbert Zipper, a former student of Richard Strauss. At the time of his arrest, Zipper had been conductor of the Vienna Madrigal Chorus and the Dusseldorf Symphony. Now these men, accustomed to applause and autograph seekers, were themselves the audience for sadistic political theater. One morning, a guard called out a prisoner's number and added, "Your mother croaked." Now it was Fritz's turn to soft pedal reality. He wrote Maria on June 1st. "My beloved good wife, today I got your precious letter of May 27th. My body, which has endured mountain hikes, doesn't abandon me here, nor do my good spirits. I'm fresh and healthy. Your Baldy has already a nice tanned color and red cheeks. Please send me 15 marks a week. Visiting, etc., is not permitted, my love. Your thoughts watch over me like a guardian angel. I can really feel them. I kiss you, your husband." Ridiculous, Maria thought. He makes it sound like he's on holiday. In Vienna, they were unfurling banners of Jewish Shylocks with hooked noses on public buildings. She tried not to imagine what might really be happening in Dachau. I'm fit as a fiddle, Fritz wrote on June 6th, knowing that my delightful Marian Kindrel and family are doing well gives me strength. Courage and balance, he wrote. Maria, we have been married for half a year. I am so happy to have you. I can feel your love so strongly, and it keeps my spirits up. He asked Maria not to worry about him, and don't think about coming here or trying in Vienna. Fritz joked that Teresa was very unlucky with sons-in-law. I will always be totally yours, beloved wife. The camp guards deliberately set out to dehumanize and disorient the privileged prisoners. Well-to-do scions like Fritz dug trenches and composers cleaned latrines. On this level playing field, comedians cheered up depressed prisoners, and a kindly grocer with a fourth-grade education became the de facto camp therapist for those who were suicidal. Soccer games matched gays against gypsies or Jews against communists. Fritz found himself befriended by burglars who bragged in meticulous detail of their heists at factories, banks, and jewelry stores. One night, smiling meaningfully at Fritz, one of the thieves described Bernard Altman's textile factory, where the cash was hidden, when workers were paid, even the watchman's dog. The burglar was one of the thieves who had broken into the factory a decade before. They had stolen so much from its safe that his accomplice had moved to America. Fritz, sitting on the dirt floor of the barracks, felt a strange lack of outrage. These criminals practiced their vocation, stealing, without disguising their crime, with legal Aryanization or self-righteous rhetoric about a German homeland. Fritz felt only envy that I was the person from whom he had stolen and not the one safe in the States. In another world in which social roles had been stripped off like carnival masks, Fritz and the burglar became fast friends. Maria's letters filled Fritz with tenderness. My beloved husband, Maria wrote on June 17. Yesterday evening they gave birth, or Tia gave birth to a healthy boy. She and Robert are overjoyed. From Landau and his friends, we were told that you will soon be on your way home. I'm with you every hour, and I dream about our reunion when I'm awake and when I'm sleeping. At the grave of Fritz's father, Carl, I prayed for you, Maria wrote. In spite of everything, I'm so incredibly blessed to have you. Your Maria. Your Maria. Fritz knew things were not fine. He knew he and Maria might never see each other again. But he clung to her gentle fictions as he drifted off to sleep, exhausted, listening to his bunkmates murmur about a rumor they would be sent to a place called Buchenwald. Instead, the guards sent Grunbaum. Maria's letters began to worry Fritz. She must stop going to the Gestapo headquarters at the Metropole to ask for permission to visit him. What if some bored bureaucrat decided to arrest her? After your last letter, you must have been especially impatient, Fritz wrote on July 3rd. Don't let Landau get to you. We didn't mind the time before our engagement, and now we know how much we love each other, even if it takes three times longer to be reunited, he wrote. Shame on you, duckling. He reminded Maria that they'd been married 6 months and joked that if they were lucky, they'd be together again by their first wedding anniversary. I want you to drive immediately to join your parents in Ischl. You hear me? I will address the next letter to Ischl. I have only one worry. If Peps is going to be well soon, Maybe he can write a few lines. A few days later, Fritz's burglar friend asked him if he wasn't married to one of the Vienna Blockbauers. He held up a newspaper obituary for Gustav Blockbauer. He had died on July 2nd. Peps, his merry father-in-law, who had cried when Maria married but had opened his big heart to his Galician in-laws. Why hadn't Maria told him? Well, it was terrible to be unable to speak with her. Fritz was marooned in an endless limbo. Day after day, he woke to dig ditches in the hot summer sun and then fell into bed for another day of toil. As he worked, he began to sing over and over a poem by Wilhelm Muller that Schubert had set to music. It was called Courage. When your heart within you breaks, sing serenely and brightly, he sang to himself. If no God is here on earth, let's all be gods together. And that is the end of the reading for tonight. The next piece of this book is called Thunder at Twilight. And that, I will say goodnight. Have a good evening.